Greetings, ware of building bridges, oh, never walls. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. The crisis deepens in Haiti, with hundreds killed amidst deepening inflation and food insecurity. Who's fueling the violence?
Chante liberté, toute nation te transformé, sous tête sorteille nous tap dansé, dans mon frappe garçon pas campé non, tout moun net connaissé haïtien nous yé. Aïe bobo, oui, dans mon frappe poste nous doublé.
Pierre Labossière is co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee, HAC, and the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, HERF, working with Haiti's grassroots movements engaged in the struggle for justice and democracy, and who works to provide information regarding conditions on the ground, assist refugees, and support community-based initiatives and institutions working for the liberation of, and the rebuilding of Haiti. Haiti, the struggle continues. Welcome to our stations.
Pierre, what are the material conditions, including the political circumstances, on the ground that continue to bring the Haitian people into the streets in protest?
Yes. And thank you so much. This is this question, it goes back to the coup d'etat of 2004, during the bicentennial anniversary of the Haitian Revolution. President Jean-Bertrand Aristide was elected in the elections of 2000, overwhelmingly, massively by the Haitian people. And with him, there were thousands, local and national representatives, many members of parliament. And these representatives were elected on the platform of Fermi Lavalas. For the most part, there were other parties, but President Aristide was elected on the platform of Fermi Lavalas, which was printed in book form called Investir dans l'Humain, Investing in People. And so Haiti, under Lavalas, during the 3 years of his five-year term, the U.S., France, and Canada carried out a coup d'etat. It was them, militarily, with their special forces, that came into Haiti on February 29, 2004, and kidnapped President Aristide, taking him first to the Central African Republic, where, with the help of Congresswoman Maxine Waters and others, he was brought to Jamaica, but then Condoleezza Rice and others of the Bush administration threatened Jamaica, and so President Aristide went in exile in South Africa, where he stayed for 7 years. And the reason I go back to this history is because it's very important to understanding the present. So why did it occur, did that coup d'etat occur? Because for one of the very few times in the history of Haiti, the people of Haiti actually had the opportunity to vote for a president and a program that was devoted to bettering the lives of the people of Haiti in terms of providing health care, education, clean drinking water, support for the peasants, for the peasant farmers of Haiti, and giving the Haitian people dignity and the promise of a better life. Not just a promise, but things were being implemented, policies to change the traditional course of the economic life and the exploitation of our people. You had a president who was working with labor unions to increase the wages and actually double the minimum wage, against the opposition of the U.S. Embassy. Schools were being built, hospitals in places that never before had healthcare centers in the rural areas or never before had schools. Schools were being built. Monies were being invested in the people. So during the 3 years of his administration, that's when the coup d'etat took place. The Haitian people, having gone through this period when things, it wasn't yet Shangri-La, but we were on our way to bettering the country for everyone, and everyone had a sense of belonging, a sense of the future could be better. The future was getting better. And so people who before had left Haiti under dictatorship were actually coming back to invest in Haiti. The flow of refugees slowed down to a trickle. And so people were feeling better about themselves and about the country. So then the coup d'etat took place, and with it, there was a massive, brutal repression that took place and a rollback of the policies that were helping people better their lives. And so people of Haiti rebelled. They went into several demonstrations in the street. It's been 18 years since that time, and we've had a UN occupation in place since February 29, 2004 to the present, during which time the economic situation has been worse. We have about close to 4 million people in danger of starvation. That's according to various figures by the UN of all people, and they've been in charge in Haiti. You look at the prisons in Haiti. There was a video circulating about the prisoners. You would think that you're looking at footage from concentration camps from Nazi Germany or from what they were doing to our brothers and sisters on the African continent in King Leopold, Congo, you know, these atrocities. That's what's going on right now as we speak today.
Well,
so these are...
Pierre, let me just for a moment. It seems to me what you're suggesting is, and correct me please if I'm wrong, that really since the coup that Haiti has been under a state of occupation and that the forces and the violence that are there to maintain it, you know, we talked about this a bit offline, are almost like the new FROP, the new Tonton Macoute. And so I wonder if that's how you see things as the Haitian people continue, Haiti, the struggle continues to fight for the material conditions, to fight for self-determination. Is this an occupation, and are the forces of violence, who really is conducting them? Are these new paramilitary forces analogous to the Tonton Macoute and the FRAP maintained by the bourgeoisie?
Yes, 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 and yes. Yes to all the above. And pretty much a new formula since the coup. What has happened is the old formula of having a Tonton Macoute Duvalier style with their uniforms and spreading terror, they have gotten a little bit more sophisticated. By calling them gangs, everybody assumes, okay, gangs are outlaws against, opposed to any government and what have you, so the government is not involved. And actually, that's the plea that the Haitian government, that successive governments since the coup have put out. Oh, we are beleaguered, we need weapons, we need this, we need to beef up the police and all of that. However, these gangs, when you hear many of their leaders speak, and I don't call them gangs, I try to avoid that, call them paramilitary death squads in the service of the government and of the occupation. That's what they are. Because they say that their weapons came to them either directly from the National Palace or from very powerful senators or people from the PHTK ruling party that's now in power in Haiti, being lackeys of the occupation. And so they tell you straight up. And everyone in Haiti, from every school child to from every little child to elderly, know that this is, and they discuss that all the time. And this reign of terror is being carried out pretty much and with total impunity. So what we are witnessing right now is a destruction of the Haitian state, of Haiti, of Haitian society, where right now you have a reign of terror that is gripping the nation, and really it's a war against the people of Haiti, who have refused to give up in the midst of this war.
The issue of Haiti being awash with weapons, who is arming these folks? And if you could talk about, since we know the fingerprints of the coup against Aristide, the U.S., their fingers were all over it, and of course the role of the United Nations. As a matter of fact, you told me something that has a certain degree of humor, that when Haitians are looking to critique somebody or to be really pejorative about them, they often call them NGOers. So yes. if you could elaborate on the role of the U.S., where the arms are coming from. Is it the U.S.? Is it the CIA or, deep state of the U.S.? What's happening with this and the role of the U.N.? Because yes. And we should punctuate that by saying that certainly there are many liberal, if you will, papers here and people within the Democratic Party and so on who say, the answer and the issue to deal with the violence and the hundreds that have been killed in the streets in Haiti recently are to bring in a U.S. peacekeeping force or the United Nations again.
Yeah, traditionally, when the weapons have always come from the U.S. or from Israel, when we say the U.S., and when we mention Israel, that's part of the U.S. bringing in the weapons. So it could be a Galil, for example, that's a weapon of choice. That's before, during the Duvalier era, it used to be the Uzi. That's what the Makuts were using. You see, the Tonton Makuts, now it's the Galil. And there is a so-called gang, which is paramilitary death squad, which calls itself Gang Galil, using the name of the weapon. So basically, what we've had during the Duvalier era, and even during 1915, if I may go that far back, the Haitian military, the original Haitian military, was just destroyed, done away with by the U.S. following their occupation. So they recreated a new Haitian military that was completely financed, equipped, and everything by the U.S., and it's been that way continuing to the present day with the new Haitian police. The Tonton Makuts, who maybe some of the younger members of the audience don't know, they were Duvalier's Gestapo, Duvalier's Nazis, Duvalier's death squads, and they had their uniforms on. And so they were equipped and trained by U.S. military missions. And so they created, it was a total reign of terror against the population. The Haitian people rebelled in 1986, overturned this entire system, and we were rebuilding a Haiti that would be free from all those forces, from all those ultra-right-wing terrorist organizations at the state level. And so that was too much for the U.S., France, and Canada, among others, to accept, because now you had factory workers in Haiti who are rising up saying, no more starvation wages. We will not accept those, and resisting. People were demanding equality, their right to have access to pick their own presidents and their own representatives at the ballot box. What were they saying? Free, fair elections. And people were demanding a seat at the table of decision-making so that their tax money would be used to benefit them, would build the things that they needed in terms of hospitals, healthcare, support for local agriculture, and all the things that make life, that give men, women, and children the kind of life that human beings deserve. And so this was too much for a tiny minority, not only in Haiti, but also abroad, outside of Haiti, that from the time they kidnapped our foremothers and forefathers from Africa, they have a slavery mindset. They don't see us as human beings, but they see us as beasts of burden who are supposed to make money to make them filthy rich. And the Haitian masses, the masses of our sisters and brothers, from the days, from the time they were on the African continent, through the Middle Passage and fighting for independence, had a very different conception of who they are as human beings and the kind of society they wanted to recreate on that land that they have freed with their blood. And so what we are seeing, the Lavalas movement today, is exactly, it goes from that history to the present. And this is the mindset of our brothers and sisters, and that's why they are refusing to accept this the status quo that seeks to keep them at the level of subhuman in subhuman conditions. And so what you're seeing, everything that's going on right now in Haiti is a campaign to maintain people in a state of acceptance. Either you accept the situation as is, or you will be killed and destroyed and terrorized and with the worst possible things, including rapes, burning, gang rapes of women, burning people alive, and so many other atrocities. We recently in Cité Soleil, a few days ago, it's been estimated, Cité Soleil is one of the largest and poorest localities near Port-au-Prince. And there is a rain of, they've been under attack so much, 300 people, it's been estimated, over 300 people have been killed. And so many rapes have occurred. And so many people have been injured by gunfire that it's incredible. Before that, we had the La Saline massacre. Before that, we had other communities of working class brothers and sisters who are big supporters of Lavalas, because Lavalas had invested a lot in people. They were benefiting from the resources, from their tax money, from their labor. And so they are constantly being attacked and repressed.
Well, in the very little time that we have left to understand, to move from the history through the present, at least take us out with a sense of the demands and the struggle. Haiti, the struggle continues. It is not a capitulation of the people. It is brutal and it is repressive. But the Haitian people have stood firm since they brought us the first liberated black republic in the hemisphere and eliminated slavery. So at this point, the demands for a government of public safety, the demands for self-determination, if you could just punctuate that for us, and we will continue to research and speak with people such as yourself and people on the ground to figure out the best way to support the people of Haiti, the valiant people of Haiti who continue their revolution towards liberation.
Yes, thank you, Mimi. And, you know, this is one of the things is that, first thing is we have to break the isolation or the way that they are keeping the people of Haiti information about the true nature of the struggle. They are keeping it under wraps. It's as if every once in a while you get a little flash, but then it's devoid of context and of the historical context in which that's happening. So people always look at, oh, poor Haiti. But I have to tell you that that's one of the things, that's why I'm happy to be on your show, to at least bring to the attention of the audience what's happening on the ground and the context in which it's happening. So it's a struggle for national liberation. It's a struggle to free the land. It's a struggle to get rid of this occupation by the United Nations forces. It's a struggle to which brings with it, which is there because they want to maintain the power of a small, little, greedy elite, both national in Haiti and international. They work together to to exploit the Haitian people, get their labor for cheap, exploit the riches of Haiti, the wealth, the mineral wealth of Haiti. Haiti has gold, copper. Haiti has silver. Haiti has iridium. And Haiti has oil. So all of that is to benefit people who refuse to, who are taking it for nothing and not paying to the Haitian people what they are taking out. So that's what the struggle is, to free the land so that we can benefit from the resources of our land and our people. And one of the things that's very important as well, and I want to leave you with a note of hope, people, as they protest in the streets, they're also building local institutions. And that's where the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund comes in. You see, people are building schools in their communities, work, farmer cooperatives, and we support as much as we can those initiatives that are life-giving and life-sustaining for the people and keeping the local production, the technological know-how that our foremothers and forefathers brought with them from Africa in terms of food production, in terms of a number of things, goods and services that people use in order to live. And so they refuse to bow down and to accept, even though the conditions are so terrible that we have many brothers and sisters who have to flee Haiti in order to find life. But the country, the overwhelming majority is in the country, and they continue to fight. So one of the things that I like to bring to people's attention, they talk about President Aristide. Well, he is a true symbol of the resilience of the Haitian people. President Aristide had founded, and his wife, Mildred Aristide, they had founded a university, UNIFA, the University of the Aristide Foundation. That's when he was in office as president. But then the school was attacked during the coup by none other than the U.S. Marines and other special forces, and they shut the school down, kicked out the medical students. Thankfully, the Cuban government sent a plane and brought them to Cuba to finish their education. After 7 years of exile, President Aristide returned, and he vowed to reopen the school. And by now, some of those medical students had graduated, and over time, some of them are part of the faculty. The school has reopened. It started with 122 students. Now it's up to 4,000 with 9 different disciplines. And they have graduated hundreds of doctors and nurses and physical therapists and attorneys. So it's phenomenal. There is a school of agriculture there. And now they have just, they are about to inaugurate, to open a teaching hospital.
And we're going to have to leave it on that note, but only long enough to say that we will continue. Just as Haiti, the struggle continues, we will continue to learn from the struggles of the Haitian people. Pierre Lauvissiere, co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee, thank you for the work you do, and thank you for bringing to us the story of the heroism and heroism of the Haitian people. Haiti, the struggle does continue. It's been a pleasure.
Tapra l'interpelle, des salinements et défilés. Non, pas besoin qu'on nationalité. Pas joue n'en cafou, force nous doubler. Nous tout compte qui est noué. Au pile maman, à papa liberté. Depuis ou proche, ou à tout coller, tant de frères. Parce que tant bon frappé, aïe bobo, yeah, tant bon frappé, vos nous doubler. Maman, tant bon liberté, tant bon frappé, vos nous doubler. Toi, tant bon mentoïdia,
Thank you all for listening. This is Building Bridges with
Kanesh
and Mimi Rosenberg, and we say educate, agitate, and organize to empower we the people for another world is possible, and we're going to make it so.